but people are trying to take those last-minute vacations, so it's a little bit lower. But we did have a good group in first service. I think they're trying to get out a little early, try to get their Labor Day vacation going on or extra day off. But we're happy that you guys are here this morning. First off, I wanted to say that one thing that I pride myself on with this church and what I love about this church is that we do church beyond these walls. And this week we had the opportunity to go out and enjoy some football games and support some of our young people. So on Thursday, I got to go out to Robbie's game in Burleson. And then on Friday night, we got to go out to Arlington High and support Antonio as their team won on Friday. So if we could throw that picture up there. There are several of us out there. And what we want you to know through this is that whatever's going on in your life, like if you have some sort of events, whether it's band, theater, athletics, any of those things, please let us know. Get us your schedules. We'd love to come out and support you because we want this church to be something that goes beyond these walls and get out there and be a part of your life. And that's the desire that we have. So on top of that, one of the things that we're going to be trying to do, and this week is the last week for life lessons from the Old Testament. So where we're going to go from here is in Ephesians, and it's becoming the church. And we want everybody to begin to learn that it's not just something that happens here, but it's something that happens out there. And when we come together, it creates something special. So that's what we'll be starting next week. But as I said, this is the last week for our life lesson. So what happens at the very end of a class or at the very end of the year when you're going through lessons? What's something that happens? You have a test, right? Yeah. So how many of you have been here every week? Just a couple. All right. So it's going to be a guessing game. Yes. I love it. So I have a couple questions that are going to be from each week. It's going to be a true or false because, you know, there's one right answer, there's one wrong answer. We'll get into that shortly here soon. But my first question is going to be from week one about Caleb, and we're going to progress throughout the weeks. So you're going to see the question up on the screen. I'm going to ask you true. If you think it's true, you raise your hand. I'll say put your hands down. And if I say you think it's false, then you put your hand up, and then we'll see who's right. Okay. So the first question I have is, Caleb's fear of the giants in the promised land caused everyone to be afraid to go fight for it. Is this true? Anybody? Tyler? False? All right. See the answer. The answer is false. Caleb was one of the two guys that actually encouraged everybody to go fight for the land, whereas the 10 other people are the ones that actually inspired the fear into the Israelites to not go for the promised land. All right, question two. God gave Gideon not one, not two, not three, but four confirmations that it was him before Gideon did what God asked him to do. All right, true? Everybody sees Joe's hand, so they're going with Joe. I see what's going on here. All right, false? Anybody say false? Everybody's like, I'm not doing it now. All right, you can go ahead and put up the answer. The answer is true. So we see the first time that the sacrifice on the rock, he said, if this is you, then wait here and we'll do a sacrifice for you. The second one was the fleece, and then we had the fleece again, so one dry, one not dry. And then the last one is he went into the camp, and he heard the soldiers talking about, man, that's Gideon. That dream that you had, that's Gideon. He's going to come and destroy us. So four times before Gideon actually went forth what God had called him to do. All right, number three. Tyler has a weird obsession with John Wick. True. All right, it's pretty anonymous. I think everybody knows. Every time he's on the stage, you know it's coming up. And I was telling somebody earlier, what you guys hear about John Wick is about one-eighth of what we hear. So that is true. All right. Number four. And I was going to say, he mentioned him in a sermon, so it was fair game to put up here. All right. Like Samson, when we mess up, God gives up on us and can no longer use us to serve him. True? False? All right. I think everybody's saying false on that one. The answer is false. All right. Number five. Jezebel, a very controlling person, used that control to drive fear into others, including her husband, King Ahab. True? False, anybody? All right. The answer is true. She did that. She was the one that ruled the kingdom and manipulated her husband to do what she wanted. All right, number six. Bathsheba was bathing on the roof, which led to the temptation and sin of David and ultimately the murder of her husband, Uriah. All right, everybody's, I heard a true out there. Let's see what the answer is. It is false. So she was actually not bathing on the roof. David was on the roof and saw her from his viewpoint, which ultimately led to the progression of those things. Now, just like any good teacher, I'm going to throw up a bonus question for anybody that got it wrong. So that way you can still get 100% on your test, all right? So this one is not a true or false, but I just want to see if you guys know this. All right, who is the father of Rehoboam? Anybody? Solomon? Yes, the answer is Solomon. So today we're actually going to be learning about Rehoboam, and the title or the tagline to this is The Unwise King. And I wanted to tag that in there because as we are going to start off talking about Solomon, what's the thing that everybody knows about Solomon? Well, he was wise. So before we kind of get into that, I want to backtrack to last week and kind of do a quick review. So last week we talked about Bathsheba and Uriah, the family that wasn't. The fact that David saw Bathsheba and in that caused him to start lusting for her, brought her into the kingdom, had an affair with her. Ultimately, she got pregnant, and through that, David tried to cover it up twice by doing certain things, trying to trick her husband into going and being with his wife. When he found out that neither of those worked, then he went and said, all right, I'm going to need you to send Uriah to the front of the battle, and when things get really bad, pull everybody else back. In the result of this, Uriah, her husband, was murdered. He was killed in the midst of battle because of a plan that David had to cover himself up. And the thing is that David thought that he was going to get away with this, but he was actually confronted by one of the prophets, Nathan. And Nathan came, did this whole story thing, kind of saying, hey, this happened with the sheep, and the guy stole the sheep from this poor man when he had plenty of sheep. And David's like, man, you need to kill that guy for what he did. And Nathan's like, hey, that was you. He's like, oh, yeah. But in result to what had happened to David after he thought he had got away with it, it caused turmoil in his house. It caused a rebellion from his son. It caused one of his sons to kill another one. And then ultimately the baby that him and Bathsheba were pregnant with, it died from the consequences of his sin for trying to cover it up. But where we go from there is that Bathsheba and David actually had a second son. That son is Solomon. So what we learn about Solomon is, yes, that he is the wisest person, the Bible says, that ever lived. But the thing is that God asked him, what do you want? What do you want? Whatever you ask for, I'll give it to you. And instead of all the riches of the world and all of this power and all this, he just said, I want wisdom. So in turn, God gave him wisdom, and because of his wisdom, people from all over the world would come to see him, bring him treasures, bring him wives, which we'll get into here in a second. And he became the richest man that has ever lived. So these are the things that we know about Solomon, but we often don't get to the end of where Solomon finished off. Let me just tell you, it's not very good. So we're going to start out reading out of 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3 through 13. So let me pray, and then we'll get started. Father God, I want to thank you so much for this morning. Lord, I thank you that you are with us, that you guide us each and every day. And Lord, as we get into this message, Lord, let our hearts and our minds be open to what you want to say today. Lord, that it would be about your words and not my words. And Lord, that we would be able to make the choices that we have to draw closer to you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, so I mentioned very briefly that people would bring wives and princesses from all over the place to marry Solomon because of how rich and how wise he was. So this is where we're picking up. Again, it's 1 Kings chapter 11, 3 through 13. It said, he had 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines. That's 1,000 women, people. I love my wife, but one's enough for me. And his wives turned his heart away from God. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Anamites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord, as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemoth, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, and the mountain on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all of his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrificed to their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he did not keep what the Lord commanded. Therefore the Lord said to Solomon, since this has been your practice, and you will have not kept my covenant and my statutes that I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. And yet for the sake of David your father, I will not do this in your days, but I will tear it out of your hand, out of the hands of your son. However, I will not tear away all of the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of David my servant and for the sake of Jerusalem that I have chosen. So my first observation this morning is that children watch their parents make choices. So we see this whole scenario here, and we ultimately see the consequences and where I'm going with this message, because the choices that Solomon made, there were going to be dire consequences, that the kingdom was going to be torn away from his son because of his choices. But the way that I look at it, the choices that Solomon was making, it's going to affect the way that his child makes choices. But as a child, when we see our parents, we feel that our parents can do no wrong. They can fix everything. The other day, Josiah blew up a whoopee cushion, like blew it up. And he came to me with the whoopee cushion and said, hey, put tape on this. It'll work fine. I was like, no, buddy, I can't fix that. That's gone. So, of course, tears ensue. And it got thrown away. But the thing is that they believe that you can fix anything. They believe that you know all of the answers. But as we know as adults, and we know as parents, that we make mistakes, right? Every single one of us in this room make mistakes. And there's going to be days where we as parents, we want to be that positive influence. We want to be able to lift up our kids and make the right choices every single day. But let's be frank, we all have bad days, right? We all have those days where our patience run thin, and our children know all the buttons that we have. They have those little attitudes every now and then. So when we start to have those days where we are bad, we just begin to picture Homer and Bart Simpson, right? We just get that image of Homer choking Bart. Hey, you guys are with me, right? I mean, I'm not the only one up here. I'm not the only parent that has had that pictured in my head, right? But the important part is we don't act on it, right? Right? Okay. I have not acted on it. I promise. But when we make those choices and we mess up, it affects our children. And I can think many days that when I've lost my patience with Josiah throughout the day, and then he goes to bed at night, I feel it. I know I've made mistakes. I know I messed up in the day, and I feel the guilt. And I think about, man, what are my choices today, and how is it going to affect him? But either way, when we choose the right thing or the wrong thing, our kids are watching. Even the wisest of us, even the smartest of us mess up. When I think of a smart person, I always think of Einstein. So Einstein, we all know him as this really genius guy. But there's one thing in his life, it's called Einstein's Big Blunder. Has anybody heard of it? All right, so what it is basically Einstein was studying the universe and figured out that the universe is ever expanding. And what that means is there has to be a beginning, right? And in admitting that there's a beginning and the universe is ever expanding, there must have been a creator. But because of the idea that Einstein did not want to believe that there was a creator, or the fact that the universe was ever expanding, he actually fudged his paperwork on purpose. And then people begin to find this out, and it's like, hey, why'd you do this? And he had to come out and say why he had done this. But when we make wrong choices or we make mistakes and we choose the wrong way or we try to deceive people, we can begin to lose merit. With the choices that we make, it affects the way that people see us. So as I talked about Solomon, I'm going to close out and see where his life ended out. And we're going to be getting into talking about how his choices had affected Rehoboam in a great way. Because I believe that a lot of the choices that Rehoboam made is because he watched his father make all the mistakes that he made. And in turn, as we begin to unfold the story, you'll see that he made a lot of very poor choices. So let's dive back into 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 41 through 43. It says, "Now the rest of the acts of Solomon and all that he did in his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the acts of Solomon? And the time that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel was 40 years. And Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. And Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place." So now we see where Rehoboam is stepping in for his father. And this is what happened when he first became king. 1 Kings chapter 12, 1 through 5. It says, "Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. And as soon as Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, for he was still in Egypt, where he had fled from King Solomon, then Jeroboam returned from Egypt. And they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, 'Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you.' He said to them, 'Go away for 3 days and then come back to me.' And so the people went away." So we look at the story that he's crowned king, and immediately the people were like, "Hey, your father was a hard king. He put a lot of hard stuff on us. So if you are a good king, what we'd like you to do is lighten the load because there's a lot." So Rehoboam says, "All right, go away. I'm going to make this choice." Observation two: every single day, choices are put in front of us. There's going to be small choices that are put in front of us, from the point to, hey, I got to get up out of bed this morning to get to work. I have to put clothes on. I have to decide what I'm going to wear. Whatever I'm going to eat. And we decide these small little choices every single day. But then occasionally we also have to make big choices. The big choices such as moving from one house to another house, changing jobs, whether you're going to have kids or not, what kind of car you're going to buy, if you're going to have more than one kid. These are big choices because they affect our lives in a great way. So we have the small choices, we have the big choices, but then there's also important choices. And the first most important choice that you're ever going to make is if you're going to choose to follow Christ, if you're going to choose to give your life over to Jesus for what he had done for us to give us salvation. That is the most important choice that you will make in your life. The second most important choice I want to say is, after you choose to follow Christ, is then, are you going to live your life out for him, or are you just going to kind of try to float by because of the forgiveness of Christ? It's a hard choice to choose when you become a Christian. Man, if you came from one life and now you're trying to go to another one, it's a hard choice to change, because maybe you like the way that you live. You realize that, hey, I'm forgiven, so I'm going to choose to just live my life the same way because I'm good. I'm going to tell you, that choice is going to affect you and it's going to affect everybody else around you. The other important choice, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago when Joe talked about Jezebel, is that the second most important choice, or the third in this case, is who you marry. Because the person that you marry is going to affect your life more than anybody else. It's not just going to affect you, but it also affects their life. And we saw the way that it affected Ahab and how Jezebel just took control and really didn't allow him to do much. But these are important choices that literally could change the direction of your life. So when we get to those important decisions, we need to make sure that we're doing it the right way. So as we get back into the story, we see that the people came to Rehoboam and they're like, "All right, this is the choice that you have." So he said, "All right, go away." So this is what he did after he told him to go away. In 1 Kings chapter 12, we're going to go 6 to 11. Then King Rehoboam took counsel with the old men who had stood before Solomon his father while he was yet alive, saying, "How do you advise me to answer this people?" And they said to him, "If you will be a servant to this people today and serve them and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever." But he abandoned the counsel of the old men, the counsel the old men gave him, and took counsel with the young men who had grown up with him and stood before them. And he said to them, "What do you advise that I answer this people who have said to me, 'Lighten the yoke that your father has put on us'?" And the young men who had grown up with him said to him, "Thus shall you speak to this people who said to you, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you lighten it for us.' Thus shall you say to them, 'My finger is thicker than my father's thigh. And now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.'" The observation that I get from this is it's wise to seek counsel to get help with your choices. It is a good idea. So what he actually did when he went away was a great idea. To go find people and say, "Hey, this is the choice that's been put before me. What do you think I should do?" And you see here first that he goes to the older, wiser people, the people that have been there, the people that have experienced, and he began to ask them. And they gave great counsel. I think you guys can agree with me that what they said was great, and you'd be like, "Man, that should be the easy answer here." But then he's like, "Let's go see what my friends, the people that I grew up with, let's see what they have to say about this." So I think when he went to them, it's like they began to stroke his ego a little bit. Kind of say, "Hey, if you do this, they're gonna think you're weak. So what you gotta do to be strong? You gotta say, 'Man, what my father did, that was nothing compared to what I'm gonna do.'" And it's so easy for us to give in to our friends, right? Those people that we grew up with, those people that are the same age as us, and especially when they start to stroke what's already there, right? We think about this in school, and when we talk about we go to get counsel from our friends. "Man, I saw this girl, or I saw this guy, and they're in my class. I think you don't get into the whole saying they're cute or anything. You just kind of say, "Hey, what do you think about this person?" Right? And then if they start to give that positive energy, that they're so great. I love being around them. They're so nice. And we're like, I was thinking about asking them out. I want to make them my girlfriend, make them my boyfriend. We start to get that counsel. But then it's like if they also give that other side, it's like, "Man, that person is so annoying." Yeah, they are. I was just wondering what you thought because I can't stand them, right? But the thing that we see here is that he did go to the older guys, but then he rejected their wise counsel and went with what his friends had said. But sometimes it's so much better to go to the people that have been there, that have experienced these things, that have the wisdom. And it's something I think we should all do. Find that mentorship. Find somebody that's older than you. Go to them, help them to, or have them help you make these choices. Because it may have been something they've experienced already. Maybe they failed at it and now they have the wisdom to go forward. Or maybe they passed it the first time and they have the wisdom. So we see here that some people are going to give us good counsel. Some people are going to give us bad counsel. But the biggest observation that I get out of this whole thing where he's going to seek counsel and he's going to try to find the answer to this is not once do you see it say that he went before God. He never went and began to ask God, "Hey, what should I do here?" How often do we as the church or how as we as Christians, we don't do this? Because we want to go to the people that we trust. We want to go to people and get that answer right away, right? We want to get that answer as soon as possible because sometimes when we go and we try to receive counsel from God, he's not always like this. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time. So often we take the counsel of people before we go to the counsel of God. And this is what we see here. So we kind of see how this story is unfolding, and we heard the counsel. Now let's see what the actual response is that he goes and gives to the people. So 1 Kings chapter 12, we're going to go 12 to 15. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king said, "Come to me again the third day." And the king answered the people harshly, and forsaking the counsel that the old men had given him, he spoke to them according to the counsel of young men, saying, "My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, and I will discipline you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which he spoke about through Ahijah, the Silonite, to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So before we get into this, I want to kind of jump back that message that it's talking about with Jeroboam is the reason that he ran to Egypt. Because when we read earlier, it said that God was going to take away the kingdom and give it to Solomon's servant, right? You guys remember this? Jeroboam was that servant, and he got a message from a prophet saying, "Hey, you're going to be the one that's going to take over." So Solomon found this out. Now he's chasing him out. He wants to kill him. So that's kind of how this whole story is correlating. You see here that the people are beginning to already follow Jeroboam, which God had set in place to happen. But the observation I get from this story, or from this portion, is God gave us the ability to choose good or bad. He doesn't make us make a choice. We have the option that when we're in situations to choose the right thing or choose the wrong thing. He leaves that up to us. But before we get into that whole thing, has anybody in here ever made it like a dumb decision? It's like, "Man, that was dumb." Or you're like, "Man, that was really stupid." But now you look back on it, you're like, "That was a funny story now." So I'm going to share a couple of my dumb decisions and the results that followed. So the first one, when I was in fifth grade, I had done this all-nighter at my church. And I grew up in Pennsylvania where there's a lot of snow. And I got in the car with my friend's dad, and I was sitting in the front seat, and I decided not to wear my seatbelt. Again, it's snowing outside. So we start driving home, and we start going down this hill not too far from the church. Well, this pickup truck is like kind of like going like this down the hill. So we come up behind, and we start sliding down the hill. So my friend's dad veers the car off, and we end up smashing into a telephone pole. Well, no seatbelt. My head flew forward, smashed into the windshield, and it spiderwebbed out and cracked the window all the way across. Luckily, I have a hard head and no concussions. But I remember having cuts all over my face from the glass and just the pain from hitting the windshield. Now, up until first service, because Tasha came to first service, she had never heard this story. So me and a couple of my friends decided that we were going to go out swimming at a lake. And I'm going to preface a couple things. One, there was girls present with us. Two, the water is cloudy because it's a lake. So I thought it would be funny to, you know, get in the water first with a couple of the guys. And, you know, to play a prank on the girls, so I decided that I was going to go skinny dipping. So while I'm out there, I take off my swimsuit, and I take it above my head, and I start going like this to just mess with the girls that are there. Well, stupid choice, because now I left myself in a really bad predicament. I either have to get out of the water butt naked in front of everybody, or I have to either almost drown myself by getting my swimsuit back on. Because you don't think about the idea that when you're trying to put a swimsuit back on, you can't kick your legs. And my thought is, I'm kicking my legs and trying to put the swimsuit on. It's like, "Man, if I drop this, I'm in big trouble. Because this water's cloudy. I don't know how deep it is. If it goes to the bottom, embarrassment city." But the choice I made, I almost drowned myself, but I did get my swimsuit back on. But I learned my lesson. Don't go skinny dipping. It's a bad idea. The other thing is, I did this thing where I was trying to defeat all my fears. And what I did was I went onto a blood donation bus. And when you go onto a bus, it's a little bit different than when you go to the doctor to do it, because you kind of go in your own room. Well, when you go on a bus, I mean, there's people just sprawled out like this. and they have the tubes coming out of their arms, and then you see these bags of blood. And from a traumatizing experience I had as a kid, I pass out when I see blood. So I had my mind ready. I was like, I'm good. I got through all. I saw the blood. I was like, all right, I'm fine. So they took me back, and they like, all right, we got to test your blood just to make sure you're good. So they pricked my finger. Nothing came out. So they decided to squeeze my finger. My blood shot straight up in the air. You can't have your mind ready for that. I had my mind ready for all the stuff on there. I was ready for it. So the next thing I know, my face is turning pale, it's getting green, and I'm sitting there going like this. They're like, you all right? I have a fear of blood. Next thing I know, what are you doing on the bus? Get off the bus! Like this, they're yelling at me, they're taking me to the back of the bus. They gave me some Gatorade and some cookies to get my sugar back up, but it was a dumb choice, you know? Should have thought that one through better. But we all have these dumb choices, but, you know, sometimes we allow our dumb choices to become careless choices, that we stop really thinking about the consequences of what we're doing. And when we start to make careless choices, we start making them bad. Often when we get into the situations, and the way that I see Rehoboam in this story, he knew the right answer. I mean, he got it the first time. Hey, if you lighten the load, we're going to serve you forever. Then the wise counsel of the old guys literally echoed that and say, hey, if you serve your people, they're going to serve you forever. It seems like a pretty obvious choice, right? So often we know the things that are right. We know the things that are wrong. But yet, we so often still choose the wrong things. We want to feed our flesh rather than serve God. So we have these options to do good or bad. We have the choice to sin or not to sin. We have the choice to love those people that irritate us, or we have the choice to hate them. The responses and the way that we choose these things affect the way that people are around us. The way that we react to people will affect potentially their choices, right? Because when we're not being that Christ-like example to somebody else and we're actually hating on them because they drive us crazy, you've probably just pushed them further away from Christ, right? So we have the choice to serve God or not. He leaves that up to us. Now, as we've seen the way that he responded to them, let's see the way that the Israelites now respond back to King Rehoboam. So 1 Kings chapter 12, 16 through 20. And when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, "What portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Look now to your own home, David, or look now to your own house, David." So Israel went to their tents, but Rehoboam reigned over the people of Israel who lived in the cities of Judah. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was taskmaster over the forced labor, and all Israel stoned him to death with stones, and King Rehoboam hurried to mount his chariot to flee Israel. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. And when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had returned, they sent and called him to assemble and made him king over all Israel. There was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. So we see the prophecy and the choices of Solomon that he made now affecting his son's kingdom. We see that prophecy has come to light. So every choice that we make, this is my next observation, every choice we make has reactions and consequences. So recently there was a very famous worship pastor that took to Instagram and saying that he was renouncing his faith, and he gave the reasons. A couple days later, he tried to retract that statement. And I want you to know, I'm not judging this guy for his actions, because we all have those moments where we doubt. But we have to think about the consequences of every single person that he affected when he sent out that message on Instagram. All the people that were literally on the verge of maybe giving up on their faith and saying, hey, if this guy can't stand it, what chance do I have? That damage is out there. And what this tells me is that when we make the choice, we should try to make the good choice the first time. Or be careful and take wisdom, or find wisdom in what's going on. Maybe he should have went and talked to his pastor and say, hey, this is what's going on, rather than blasting out to the whole world. So sometimes we can try to go and say sorry if we make the wrong choice. But sometimes we know when the damage is done, that relationship is never going to be the same again, right? So every choice that we make has consequences. Bad choices can affect us and others. We see the way that one way that it affects Rehoboam here is now the kingdom is stripped and torn into two. But let's see further what happens here. So 1 Kings chapter 14, 22 through 28. It says, "And Judah did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins that they have committed, more than all that their fathers had done." So their sin is greater than anything that had happened before. "For they also built for themselves high places and pillars to Asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there were also male cult prostitutes in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations that the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. In the fifth year of King Rehoboam, Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. He took away all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. He took away everything. He took away all of the shields of gold that Solomon had made, and King Rehoboam made in their place shields of bronze and committed them to the hands of the officers of the guard who kept the door of the king's house. And as often as the king went into the house of the Lord, the guard carried them and brought them back to the guard room." So what we see here is because of the choices and the way that Rehoboam was leading the people, it said that they did some pretty bad things, that it was far worse than any of the things that had happened before. It's because of the choices that he was making were beginning to affect everybody within the country because he was the king, he was the leader, and he was giving them a bad example. He was making these wrong choices. So in turn, it was affecting the way that everybody else was choosing things and the way that they looked at God, and because they're like, "God, you put this king here and this. Why should I serve you?" All kinds of questions going in there. But then we also see that I said that Solomon was the richest person that ever lived. Well, the Shishak guy literally came in and took all of it. Like, it's gone. Great effect on Rehoboam as well as the kingdom, because now all the riches were gone. Guys, we have to be careful with the choices that we make. Sometimes these choices that we make seem small, but we have no idea the way that it's going to affect those around us. You know, some of the hardest times in my life and things when I'm going through things, I go to people and I ask them, you know, what should I do with this situation? How can I get through this? What is the best way that I can do this? It's a good thing to do that, but it's also, don't forget to pray, which brings me to my final observation. When we make our choices, we should always choose to serve God and do what is right. Even though we may make this decision that we want to live our lives out that way, there's always going to be mistakes that are happening. There's always going to be things where we choose the wrong way. But some ways that we can get into asking God, you know, what is the right way? What's the wrong way with this? First is to pray. Get down on your knees and begin to ask God, what can I do in this situation? And we look at Luke chapter 11, 9 through 12 or 9 through 10, and it says, "And I tell you, ask and you will receive, and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened." God's saying, ask me. You want to know the choice? You want to know the answer? Ask me, and I'll give it to you. But take the time to go to the counsel of God and ask him through prayer. Also, is it contrary to the Bible? Is what you're trying to say or what you're trying to choose, is it contrary to what God is saying about those situations? I'm not going to read this whole scripture I have here, but I'm going to read the beginning because it should help you in the way that you make choices. It's Colossians 3, starting in 12. It says, "But on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony." When you're making choices that affect other people, keep these things in mind. Are you being compassionate? Are you being loving? Are you willing to forgive? These are choices that we have to make. You know, the Bible's not always going to tell you directly, hey, you should go to this school or you should go to this job. But sometimes when you read, all of a sudden something just makes sense and it clicks with you. Go to counsel with God whenever something's tough, whenever you don't know the answer. I want to invite the worship team up here. The last thing that I want to close out with is I talked about the most important decision that you can make. The first most important thing is choosing to serve God with your life. To choose that salvation. So this morning, they're going to be singing, I've Decided to Follow Jesus. And we want to open up the altars up front. We'll pray with you if you want to come forward. But maybe you've never made that choice to follow Christ. We want to open up that opportunity because it's the most important choice that you'll ever make in your life. Or maybe you have been following Christ, but you've been choosing the wrong way every single day or frequently. We want to open up the opportunity to pray with you and help you through this time to help you find the right path. Because what the Bible says in Matthew 7, 13 and 14, it says, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. This morning, I want you to be one of those few that find the right path. It says it's not easy, so it's not always going to be easy to make these choices, but as the band begins to play, come up to the altar, come up to the stage, or even pray in your seat that God will help you to make the right choices. But today, let's make the choice together to commit to do what God has called us to do.